welcome to another special episode of the Mohawk Games Podcast, The Company Chat. This week, we're joined again by Daniels Umanovskis as he lays out the foundation for the fourth and final scenario for the Carthage campaign. So stay tuned. Hello and welcome back to the show, Daniels.
Thank you. It's good to be back once more.
Yes, once more into the breach, and unfortunately the last time for at least this series, where we're going to finish up with the Carthage scenario and the campaign, and you're here to tell us about the fourth scenario. So would you mind laying out the groundwork for us?
That's right. So our Carthage campaign concludes with the fourth scenario, part four and the final part, Seizing Destiny, which is the grand conclusion, really epic, big scale conclusion to the entire campaign, taking place during the second major war between Carthage and Rome, so the Second Punic War. But before we go into that and into the details of this scenario, then maybe a brief historical background again to what was happening, why are they fighting again, what's going on, what happened in the preceding years. So at the end of the First War, which was scenario number three in our campaign, and that is not so long ago, that's just a couple of decades before the Second War, and at the end of this First War, both sides, the Carthage, Rome, they were really broke from the war. It was a long war, they lost a lot of money, a lot of people, and even though it was a Roman victory in the game, maybe if you did well in the game, then it's not much of a Roman victory, then it's pretty much neutral. In reality, it was a Roman victory, but not really a huge one. They gained a little bit of territory, they gained political influence, but it wasn't decisive. So the damage done to both sides was huge. And Carthage was, as we know, using a lot of mercenaries. That also goes for the preceding war. So after the war ended, Carthage suddenly found that it doesn't have the money to pay all of those mercenaries that were fighting for Carthage. And of course, that's not really a good situation to be in. You have an entire army and you cannot pay them. So things got really tense, and Carthage was negotiating with those mercenaries, with their leaders, and it seemed like they had an agreement on partial pay and repayment plans. So really, sounds kind of like a modern problem, but the same thing 2,000 years ago. But in the end, all of that broke down, and Carthage had a full-scale mutiny and revolt from the mercenaries, so right there in Africa, in the middle of Carthaginian territory. And then for quite a while, Carthage had to fight its way against its former army. And that was not a long conflict, but it was very brutal. It was very, again, heavy with losses on both sides. So some cities rebelled entirely, and then they were put down, those rebellions were put down. Then more cities rebelled, and this kept happening and happening. The mutineers, they slaughtered a bunch of Carthaginian soldiers, then the Carthaginian army came back in and slaughtered them back, and so on. So eventually Carthage prevailed. Carthage did regain most of its territory, but an interesting thing happened on the islands, which in the Mediterranean. So on Sardinia, so one of the major islands, that the major Carthaginian city there had also rebelled, killed the army, and Carthage was just about to send its fleet back there to retake that, when Rome finally figured out that, okay, Carthage is weak, and this is a good time to have an excuse that, you know, Carthage is now sending its armies too close to Rome and allegedly breaking the peace treaty of the First War. So Rome, it just blatantly seized the opportunity to annex all of the islands in the Mediterranean. It sent an army to Sardinia, it sent an army to Corsica, and it just took those islands over. Carthage was, after a war, after now this mutiny, Carthage was in no position to fight back. So that's what happened. The Rome retained control over those islands, and the relations between the two countries, of course, only got worse.
I'm curious, Daniels, could you explain to me where the mercenaries actually came from? Were they Carthaginian citizens, or were they, you know, hiring these mercenaries from other countries?
Yeah, it's not really other countries, but Carthage, it was just like typical for many empires, right? That it rules over areas where maybe the majority of the population is of a different tribes or of different ethnicities. So these mercenaries that rebelled, they were mostly Numidians, or they were of some other African tribes. So these were African mercenaries to the west of where Carthage, their main stronghold lied. So there were Numidians, but there were also Libyans, and there were all kinds of local African tribes that they had been Carthaginian citizens, but loyalty only went as far as the money went. So when the money stopped coming, then they went and rebelled.
Okay, so they quell that uprising, and in the process, the Romans seize an opportunity to take advantage of a weakened Carthage. So
That's right. Rome did that. Rome seized the opportunity, and here we come to one of the most interesting people involved in this. So a certain Hamilcar, who was in charge of the Carthaginian army for putting down the uprising, Hamilcar. And he fought also in the First War against Rome. And some might remember that this Hamilcar, he is the father of Hannibal, the famous Hannibal. So Hamilcar, he fought against the mutineers. He continued to hone his skills, and he really hated Rome already from the First War. And here he had the time to further train on the battlefield. And it is said that Hamilcar, he was from early childhood, he was teaching Hannibal that, you know, the ultimate enemy is Rome. Romans are terrible. So Hannibal, who later fought against Rome in the Second War, Hannibal hated Rome from the very beginning. He had, as a child, he had sworn to put an end to Rome, to avenge the Carthaginian loss in the First War, and he discussed strategy with his father. He learned from his father, and that's what he was all about as a child already, and then later as a young man. End Rome, kill the Romans, glory to Carthage, avenge Carthage, basically.
That sounds like a pretty decent war cry. So, well, then I understand here we're also faced with an opportunity to kind of change history a bit, right?
Right. So where the scenario actually starts now is this, the outbreak of the Second Major War. Carthage has been expanding again a little bit, and this time mostly in Iberia, so modern Spain. And finally, after Carthage under Hannibal now captured one of the minor cities there, just from local tribes, like Saguntians, the city of Saguntum. Then Rome also decided, okay, this is now an act of war. They will, the diplomatic and political justifications don't matter as much as the fact that Rome again saw that Carthage is a threat. And Rome knew a lot about Hannibal's skill, so they wanted to fight Carthage again before things got too bad. And so they did. And as you're saying, in this scenario, we do get to change the history a little bit, or possibly a lot if you do well, because of course your ultimate goal in the fourth scenario, seizing destiny, is to, as the name suggests, seize your destiny to be the ruler of the Mediterranean region and defeat Rome, make Rome subordinate to the Carthaginian Empire. What happened historically, of course, was that Rome won the war, although it came very, very close to losing. Hannibal, he is a brilliant general, and he defeated one Roman army, he defeated another Roman army, he crossed the Alps, that famous moment, Hannibal crossing the Alps with his elephants, he fought in northern Italy, then he went deeper in, he was on the outskirts of Rome itself, but he never won. And in the meanwhile, Rome, it managed eventually to seize Iberia, it managed to invade Africa, and there in Africa, Carthage was having a very difficult time, so it had to recall Hannibal to help the defense. But nonetheless, Rome won in Africa, and that's how the war ended, with a pretty complete Roman victory. Rome took over most of what it was Carthaginian territory. And here you're trying to change that. So you will try to defend against all of the Roman attacks. And importantly, you will try to keep Hannibal with his brilliance. You will try to keep him on the offensive. So you don't move him back to defend, even if it seems necessary. You try to keep pressing on with him. And so eventually you go on and beat Rome, hopefully.
Daniels, with Hannibal being such a huge player in this scenario and in the war itself, how do you portray him in this particular scenario in the game?
Hannibal is, of course, a major part of the scenario, and we wanted to do something special with him. We wanted to make the players feel how powerful he was. So Hannibal appears as sort of a hero unit. You say he's not really a unit, but he's a general. He starts in command of one of your units. And as a general, he is by far the most powerful general in the game. So he has a bunch of special abilities. In addition to just increasing the unit strength and so on, he can also heal outside of his territory. And as a commander, he also boosts all units that are adjacent to him. So as you're moving your army, which has Hannibal in the middle, then all of the surrounding units are stronger, and the unit commanded by Hannibal directly is super strong. The scenario lets you test it right away, because there is a battle on turn one as soon as you start. And in that battle, you get the opportunity to see how much Hannibal matters, what he can do to the Romans. And here I have to, again, give special thanks to Jason Pastrana, our artist, who also drew a special portrait for Hannibal that only appears in this scenario. So we have a Hannibal portrait that appears in the narrative events. And it's really a great portrait. I'm very happy to have it in the scenario.
That's awesome. And so Hannibal, I know, wasn't the only major character in this conflict. Can you tell us a little bit more about maybe other people that might appear?
So we have the Roman leader, Scipio, who would become known as Scipio Africanus after his historical victory. So here you're facing off against Scipio in command of Rome. But there's also one other very cool guy who appears as sort of a side story, but I really like how it goes in the scenario. So the Greek scientist Archimedes, the famous Archimedes, the inventor and polymath and thinker, historically he hailed from the city of Syracuse that you might remember was on Sicily. And in history he died during this war, because Rome, it at one point decided that it was going to control all of Sicily. So it just attacked the city of Syracuse, the city-state. Rome laid siege to it, and that siege is really legendary thanks to Archimedes, who was allegedly, this sounds completely over the top, but he was basically single-handedly defending the city against the Roman armies and navies. It is said that Archimedes, he constructed super weapons. He constructed some kind of giant iron claw or hand that could sink Roman ships from within the city's fortifications, like pick them up and drop them back into the water. That's probably an exaggeration, but it sounds really cool. And then another story from the same siege is that Archimedes was using huge mirrors to focus sunlight against, again, Roman ships and set them on fire that way. So really, really cool stories. While they're likely exaggerated, it's quite certain that Archimedes, he was in charge of engineering the city's defenses, and he really did do cool stuff, and it was much more difficult for the Romans than anybody could have thought. But historically, Rome eventually took the city, Syracuse fell, and then the Roman soldier killed Archimedes. In our scenario, you get the opportunity to save him. So when the Romans attack Syracuse, you will have the opportunity to provide some help to Archimedes and the city. And if you do enough, if you keep helping him, then Syracuse will defend itself successfully. And as a token of thanks, Archimedes, he will leave the city and he will join your court. So you will have Archimedes on your side if you can manage. And what does he do in the game? Well, he is a brilliant scientist, so he just boosts your research significantly. And also, he, as an inventor of these cool things, he will eventually invent some cool stuff for you. I don't want to give too much away. And also, I cannot in a way because it's partially random. But for as long as you have Archimedes, he's really old. He's like in his mid-70s when he joins you, so he won't be around forever. But while you have him, he might occasionally invent some stuff for you that will in turn be useful for the war. And here I should again mention that Jason, he also drew a special portrait for Archimedes. So him and Hannibal, that's two portraits that only appear in this scenario. And that's another great portrait. So I'm also very happy to have this character in the game.
Excellent. That sounds amazing. To be clear here, it sounds like the idea to kind of ascend here with Carthage, you would not only need to be pushing forward with Hannibal, but also be successfully defending your territory in Iberia and other places south of that, and do that in a way that was counter to how history went.
Right. So you will have to go a little bit further than history. You will have to defend better than Carthage did in history. And eventually you will also have to correct what was possibly the biggest mistake of Carthage in the war, which was not to attack Roman cities directly. So that's one very weird thing about this war. Hannibal, he would destroy Roman armies in several battles. There is a famous Battle of Cannae where he destroyed lots of Romans in a brilliant pincer movement, and then Hannibal won battles before that and after that. At one point, Rome was getting so desperate that it started conscripting even slaves into its army, which it normally didn't do, because Hannibal just kept killing everyone. But what Hannibal did not do is he did not lay siege to cities. He did not assault cities. And at one point, even though he was, as I mentioned, very close to Rome, so the capital city, he did not try to attack it. He possibly had this idea that if he just keeps defeating the armies, then Rome will eventually surrender. But Rome, anyone else would have surrendered, probably after losing army after army after army. But Rome, no. Rome fought on, and Rome kept somehow finding the manpower, and they didn't surrender. So what you will have to do is also seize Roman cities, and seizing enough Roman cities will be part of your goals to actually win this war. And then, well, that's when the Mediterranean region becomes Carthaginian. And of course, we don't go into later history, but it's really fun just to speculate about what could have happened, because Rome won. Rome became this super powerful empire. And as a result, the Western world was largely decided by Rome in everything from us using, the Latin alphabet to our government and many, many other things. So it would have been a very, very different world if Carthage had won and if Carthage had become dominant in the region. I think at the end of this campaign, you are setting course for a very interesting alternate history.
Wow, yeah, that's actually an important point to make. And now that you said it, I didn't realize how much of our even modern day culture has been influenced by Roman culture. So yeah, to think that maybe there would have been a chance for, someone else to lay the foundation of everything, really, and to see what it would have been like now.
Right. It's everything, even up to our architectural styles. Like I know you're American, and there also, even though it's a fairly new country, you still have the government buildings, the state capitals and the Lincoln Monument in Washington, D.C. and so on, that are built in this style that in turn imitates what the Romans have been doing. And in Europe, it's all over the place. So even things like that would have been different. Without Rome, nobody would be imitating Roman architecture. So it would be a very different world.
That's great to hear. That's really cool. I really like that kind of alternate history stuff. All right, Daniel, so what else would you like us to know going into this last scenario?
The last scenario has a bunch of other smaller special rules that we have adapted. For example, everybody ages slower. The year one turn is just one season, so it's four turns are 1 year. And as such, it also means that we kind of changed the tech tree for the final scenario. You know, it if it's a war that only lasts a few years, it doesn't feel right to be researching tons of different technologies. So in the final scenario, instead of the usual tech tree of old world, you just have four technologies which are all new to the scenario, and each of them gives you a powerful benefit. And you will probably not be able to research all four, so you just look at them and you decide what kind of benefits you would like. And in conclusion, I think this is a really good final scenario for the campaign, just in terms of how epic and how big scale it is. You know, if the previous war was mostly focused on Sicily and around the islands and so on, then here you have warfare everywhere. You have it in the west, you have it in the east, you have Hannibal doing his famous crossing of the mountains, you have some naval engagements, you have a defense, you have offense. So it's really, it's a grand conclusion. And I should say here that the scenario is quite difficult, so you might not be able to defeat Rome the first time around, but considering history, that's probably fair, right? That defeating Rome should not be too easy. So that's it, and I really hope that those players who have played the first three scenarios, that they will enjoy this grand conclusion.
Excellent. And so the grand conclusion will be released with the actual final released version of Old World, right?
That's right. Old World releases on July the 1st, the whole game, and then the fourth scenario will as well be in it, and with that, the entire cartridge campaign.
Fantastic. I'm really excited, and it's going to be time for me to jump in and see how well I can fare. So I'm really excited about this. Thanks for joining me, Daniels. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yeah.